Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society, to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Andrea Grover, who is the executive director at Guildhall. And we're going to be discussing upcoming events. And I thought I would start because practically everybody knows that the Guildhall has been under great changes in the last couple of years in construction and what things look like. And I wanted to tell you a quick story. The last time Guildhall was done over was about 20 years ago. And what they did at that time was refresh it. It was pretty dirty and in, you know, the hat box and everything inside. And we sent a reporter there who was new to the area and told her to write about what it was like. And she came back with a story about how wonderful the theater was and how this whole thing, it was now a hat box and it was all new to her. So she was writing about it as if it was some broken down theater that now is terrific when all they did was clean it, which I thought was very funny. Anyway, that's what I wanted to tell you about. And you've been there for 9 years?
Yeah, I started in the fall of 2016. So I'm at 8.5 years, technically, like the Fellini movie. And it does feel a bit like a art house comedy drama here.
In what way?
Oh, just we represent all the disciplines and more disciplines in the arts, I think, than any other organization in the region. So there's just a lot of variety and a lot of people and a lot of kind of stories happening here all the time, like an Italian film.
How many people work there?
There are 21 people in the administrative office, and then we have about the same number in part-time staff and seasonal staff. We also notably have 20 teenagers on staff as part of the Teen Arts Council. They're paid members.
Do you also have somebody, a docent, not a docent, some like an author or a playwright in the adjacent building?
We do. We have a residency program, and it's not in the adjacent building, but it is in East Hampton. It's called the William P. Rayner Artists in Residence Program. And that program is to develop new works in a kind of purpose-built studio with whatever resources the artists or group of performers need, from pianos to sprung floors for dance to lighting, sound systems, that sort of thing. But that's so they can develop new works that will come back to our stage and then to other stages.
Well, besides the stage, which we'll get to, you mentioned there were a wide variety of things in the arts, I guess, and more than even in the arts. What categories of things are you talking about? I know we do gallery shows, and what are some of the other things?
So we are a fully accredited art museum. We're one of about 1,000 institutions in the U.S. that have formal accreditation by the Association of Art Museums. That means that we have to be held to very rigorous standards for showing art and the stewardship of art objects. So the museum opened in 1931, just like the theater. And the theater, which is a 300-seat theater, has a history that really parallels theater history in the United States. So we've had a number of Pulitzer Prize winners and Tony winners and esteemed, you know, playwrights, dancers, filmmakers, anyone who lived in the community, which is this very, you know, special context where a lot of creative people converge in one place.
Very true. What's coming up, and consider this will probably run after the 4th of July, so start there and tell what's coming.
We have a lot of dance this year. We have Gibney Dance coming. Dance Theater of Harlem is coming for the very first time. We also have Bill T. Jones and the Arnie Zane Company. They'll be presenting a brand new work by Jones. We also have the New York City Ballet. They do this informational kind of beautiful program called On and Off Stage, where the dancers speak and tell you what you're about to see and the complexity of it and the writing behind it and the music. And then you watch them perform for, say, a 10-minute excerpt, and then they teach you a little bit more about the dance. So it's a really remarkable and super popular program that we do every year that we can.
Is this in the theater or in the galleries?
That's in the theater, yeah. And in the galleries, we have two exhibitions this summer. Currently, and up through July 13th, we have Functional Relationships, which is artist-designed furniture. These are objects that artists make to sit on or to lay down on or to light their rooms out of available materials and materials that really reflect their values. And as part of that, Alman Zygman, an artist who lives out here in East Hampton, has created a lounge made of objects that she's put together, including her own and others. And then we have Mary Heilman, who's a painter who lives in Bridgehampton for many, many years. Mary will be exhibiting in August, starting August 2nd, along with the artist Joel Mesler, who will have a kind of therapy drop-in space for people to visit with the artists, learn about him and learn about themselves, really.
Are there more people who would like to use the theater or the gallery than there's time and space?
I think this is a very extroverted theatrical community. So yes, a simple answer is yes. But we try to accommodate as many as possible through our own programming, but we also have a rental program, community rentals, and a lot of other groups that don't have bricks and mortar, say, will use our theater for their presentations. But we do have a history of kind of everyone and their uncle being on our stage. I do an informal poll when I talk to crowds, and especially if they're local crowds, and I say how many people have either exhibited in our galleries or performed or presented on our stage or even just walked on our stage. And it's usually like 75 to 80% of the room, which is not usual.
It is very. I think Guildhall is a keystone for the community.
It's rare.
Well, tell us a little bit about the theater. And there was such a controversy about it, in that it was going to be renovated and changed around to sound better, but it would lose some of its classic, I call it hat box, look. And how did it end, and how did that work out?
Oh, it worked out beautifully. And I think last week was the finest example of the whole process succeeding. We had the dancer, the principal from New York City Ballet, Tyler Peck, with her husband, Roman Mejia, here, along with other dancers and musicians. And they presented an evening that Tyler herself curated. And it was spectacular because the room still retains its character, 100% of its character, with the ceiling that everyone adores. But we have lighting, acoustics, a sound system, an audio system, and you can see the footwork of dancers. You used to, because the floor wasn't raked steeply, you couldn't see dance work from the knee down.
Yes.
So anyone who was here had an absolutely beautiful, memorable, life-altering experience. And you don't even think about these things, but when something sounds good, you just feel better. When you can see everything, you feel more engaged. So those kinds of changes, though they may seem kind of invisible to many, really have an effect on your perception of a performance. And the performers feel better too.
One of the things that always struck me about these battles between one group and another, and this one should change to that one, was the desire of mostly of the village to keep the look of Guildhall on the outside the same. And that's also pretty much was true with the library across the street. And they do. And the way it's been accomplished, I think, is kind of funny. It's going down. It's sort of like one of the offices and things are below ground now. But it's almost like the only other place, and I mean, East Hampton's a real place, right? The only other place I know of where that goes on is Disney World, where everything is underground.
So true. Yeah,
But
they have like a whole police department underground. They have a pr apparently Disney World has a little jail underground too for naughty people. In Houston, Texas, I lived in Houston for
you don't have one here, though, Jill. No.
no. I lived in Houston, Texas for 15 years. My husband's a Texan. And because it's so hot there, they built underground tunnels to connect all of the downtown buildings. And that was kind of fun. It was like a shopping mall beneath the pavement.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from Freeport, New York. My dad was a boat builder, is a, I mean, he's still with us. He's 98, but he was a boat builder and a fisherman. Started fishing on the Great South Bay in 1932 as a cod fisherman.
Was the first location of a printer who did Dan's papers in 1960.
They have good printers in Freeport.
I was on Main Street, and I remember directly across the street from a Baptist church where they had evening services and
Yep.
singing, we worked through the night to get the first paper out. That was a long time
I
ago.
know that church because that church was a movie theater
Oh, I
that
didn't.
became a church, and it's something of life. I can't remember. I think it's still there, but it was a church that had formerly been a movie theater because Freeport was a vaudevillian town. There were a lot of entertainers who lived there, and there was an amusement park that burned down that was like a mini Coney Island. But there were several vaudevillian hotels, so there were a number of theaters in Freeport that became, were adaptively reused for other purposes. But yes, a lot of industry too.
Did you study to become involved with the arts?
I studied art. I studied studio arts, and I went to Syracuse University as an undergraduate, and then I went to the Art Institute of Chicago for graduate school. Right up until I started curating in the 2000s, I had a studio practice. I made art, and I still love to, but I don't consider myself a professional artist. I think to be a professional artist, you have to be making art continuously, and I've been on hiatus. I do watercolor.
How did you become the director here?
Of Guildhall.
Yes.
It's never a straight line, right, Dan? It's always like, I don't know, maybe it was for you, but it wasn't for me. So I was a studio artist. I was awarded a fellowship and moved to Houston, Texas when I was 25 for this artist fellowship, the Museum of Fine Arts. Long story short, I was very creative and young and entrepreneurial. So I started doing programming and exhibitions and showings of films that caught the attention of cultural institutions because these events were sort of participatory. They were one night only pop-up events. They were very lively. And so institutions started saying, could you do that for us? Bring some energy here, get some younger people through our doors. And I started doing that. And before long, I too was institutionalized.
How did you hear about the offer? Was it an offer they made to you? How'd they find you?
Yeah, well, I had met the former director of the Parrish Art Museum, Terry Sultan, in Houston, where she was the director of the museum at the University of Houston. And she was one of those people who was saying, can you bring those, energetic programs to us? So when she moved here for the Parrish Art Museum job, she said, the door's open if you want to come and work with me. And I did. And so I did eventually. So I moved out here in 2011 to work at the Parrish Art Museum, where I was the curator of special projects, which is code word for doing things outside the lines of normalcy. At the Parrish, I created something called the Parrish Roadshow, which took art on, literally on the road to other places. And I did other programs that are popular, like the Pejacucha Night, which is where everyone has 6 minutes and 40 seconds to tell their life story. And then I guess that kind of fun and the kind of spontaneity that I brought to the Parrish was recognized by Guildhall when Ruth Appelhoff had decided that she was going to be stepping down. And so the president of the board at the time, Marty Cohen, invited me to lunch. And that's how it began.
Do you have any connection with the Demon Eels? Because they were big in
Yes. I love, well, only that they were huge influences on my development as an artist, because I moved to Houston at 25 and Dominique de Menil was still alive. And I would go to museum openings and there would be Robert Rauschenberg, or, you know, you name an iconic American artist would be there with Dominique. The Menil's philosophy, which was that museums should be open late, so they're open till 7 o'clock every night, because working people deserve arts and culture. Museums should be free, and museums shouldn't over-explain art, because everyone has the intellectual capacity to have a perceptual experience. So that foundation for me was revelatory. And I really love what the Menil family and Heiner Friedrich, who's out here, did for the arts, founding the DIA Art Foundation, along with Fariha de Menil. Anyway, so the Menils, very significant people in terms of influence on my trajectory.
You were lucky they were in Houston, you know, that where you went.
Yeah, well, you know, Houston, for better or worse, is one of the largest petrochemical manufacturing areas in the world. So there was a lot of money for art and a lot of patience.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. It runs 20 minutes. I'll wish you well and have a wonderful day. It's a beautiful day out today. And
thank you. You too. I'm doing comedy tonight if you want to come by Guildhall. My debut comic act.
Oh, when is that?
5 o'clock. It's at the members meeting. Very low stakes, 5 minutes.
Oh, I see. And when is it? Is that?
It's, I'm going on at 5 tonight.
I'll try and get there.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.